Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for April 14th, 2017. I'm Nima Naderi alongside John Horn, and we're here this week to preview the Monte Carlo Rolex Masters from Monaco. This week's podcast is brought to you by Top Notch Tennis Tours. Make sure to check them out for all the upcoming Masters events in Monte Carlo, Madrid, and Roma. This week's, let's introduce our first and foremost, our guest host this week, John Horn. How are you, buddy?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Happy Easter to you and everybody out there.
Absolutely. And just wanted to quickly, for everybody out there who doesn't already follow John on Twitter, he's a freelance producer and reporter for TSN, for ESPN, for the MLB Network, and a bunch of other awesome sites. So make sure to check him out at SportsHorn on Twitter. You get some awesome, especially ATP coverage, because that's his specialty. So, John, so first and foremost, we're getting pretty much into the beginning of the clay court season here with the big tournament underway on Sunday in Monte Carlo. Not all of the big names are there, but we definitely have, you know, some of the guys returning, thankfully, to action, like Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic. Both will be looking to, you know, get their form going, as they pretty much exclusively dominated the clay court season in 2016, playing in the French Open finals as well. Before we get into that action, wanted to get your thoughts a little bit on the Davis Cup. And the reason why I want to bring that into play is that it wrapped up last week with quarterfinal action. Semifinals are set for the mid-September after the U.S. Open final comes up. And just your thoughts overall. I mean, this has been, you know, beat into a drum a little bit by a lot of people throughout the years, but I really think a lot of, you know, the ITF and a lot of the authorities out there are starting to look at it and say, listen, you know what? This calendar is not working, because let's look at the U.S. and Australia tie, right? So these guys are playing in Miami. Whoever, you know, a guy like Kyrgios made it pretty deep, right? Then they go all the way back to Australia, same with like Jack Sock and John Isner, who were playing, and Steve Johnson, who were playing this week in Houston. You go to Australia.
21-hour flight yeah, to get from Miami to Australia.
Exactly. And then you got to trek all the way back to Houston, Texas. You know what I'm saying? It's just, like, it's ridiculous. And I understand, listen, yeah, these guys are making a lot of money, this and that, but who cares, right? Like, how a lot of sports, people in the sports make a lot of money. They don't do this type of traveling. It's not good for the body. It's not good for anything, the quality of the sport, right? So there definitely needs to be something addressed, because even if you have a guy like Kyrgios, who was initially set to play Monte Carlo, but he pulled out because he said, listen, I'm done, right? Like, I need to relax. He had, you know, good results in both Indian Wells and Miami. Now he comes in, and, you know, he's going to take some time off and get ready for Estoril. And you can see that with a lot of the other players. So what do you think overall of this format? And, you know, there's been some suggestions thrown out there, but what are your thoughts on that overall?
Well, I mean, I think there's absolutely no question that the Davis Cup has to, you know, the ITF has to sit down and figure out a better plan, because the players aren't happy. The tour isn't happy. Nobody's happy with the way things are going, and it's becoming a problem. Every year it's getting worse and worse. A lot of players are pulling out with alleged injuries.
Yes.
Look, some players are obviously injured, but a lot of players are citing injuries. But there's a lot of players, you know, Rafael Nadal, for example, he's making no bones about it. Like, when he talks at press conferences about the Davis Cup, he just said, look, like, my body can't handle all this tennis. It's just, there's a lot of tennis as it is. And, you know, I always say this whenever I talk to anybody about tennis, comparing it to other sports, and not to, you know, they're obviously different sports and take different tolls on their body and so forth. But, you know, tennis is a worldwide sport, unlike any other sport in the world. You're playing essentially 11 months of the year all across the world, not just in North America and Europe. You're in South America. You're in Australia. You're in Asia. You're all over the world. Playing on multiple surfaces. It's not just hardcore. You're playing on grass, you're playing on clay, you're playing indoor hardcore, you're playing outdoor hardcore. There are lots of different facets of tennis, and it takes a toll on your body. And mm-hmm. then to ask players on top of the schedule that they already have to keep, and you know, a lot of these guys, they have to play certain tournaments to keep their points and keep their rankings up. You know, then we start throwing in extra tournaments or extra events like the Davis Cup. It just becomes more and more difficult for these players. And, you know, it's really tough for the players, too, because, you know, anytime you're asked to represent your country, and you know what that's like with, you know, in Canada with hockey and, you know, with soccer and things like that for other countries in the world,
yes.
it's very difficult to turn that down. You want to play for your country. You want to represent your country. But some of the players just cannot do it with the schedule that's going on right now. And, I mean, Andy Murray is one of those players who's played a lot of Davis Cup in the past and mm-hmm. helped Great Britain win the Davis Cup a couple years ago. You know, but, I mean, you're asking the number one player in the world to play the schedule he's already playing and then ask him to play Davis Cup on top of that. A perfect example was the first round of the Davis Cup this year. You're asking players who, you know, Murray ended up losing early, but, you know, if he's going deep at the Australian Open, and then you're asking him and you're asking Raonic to not only, you know, fly from Australia to Canada and, say, the West Coast, then you're asking them to fly to the East Coast of Canada as well,
yes.
Right after playing the Australian Open the following week. I mean, that again, is just another absurdity with the schedule. And like you said, with Miami, you're playing in Miami, and then you're asking players to go all the way to Brisbane, Australia, and then fly all the way back to the U.S. Like Jack Sock is playing in Houston, and he's playing well in Houston. But still, I mean, that's a lot. And if he was an American, he wouldn't be playing that tournament. I'm pretty sure he'd be taking the week off.
Of course.
If he feels obligated to play, I'm not sure of it. And you know, guys like Kyrgios are skipping Monte Carlo. As great as that tournament is, it's just too much. I mean, asking players to go from Miami to Australia all the way over to Europe, I mean, within 2-3 weeks, it's just insanity. So, you know, the long and the short of it is that the ITF has to sit down and has to listen to what the players have to say, and they have to change the schedule and they have to make something better. And a lot of talk has been thrown out there amongst the players. I saw something from Jim Courier the other day about how he thinks that they should make it a 2-week tournament and just have all the countries competing in one location in a 2-week tournament. And I think that would be a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Really get, you know, if it's not, it's unfortunate for the countries that get to see Davis Cup every once in a while. This would sort of, you know, almost make it like a World Cup of soccer or another international event where you only get to see the teams maybe once every 8 years, every 10 years, so they rotate it around. But I just think schedule-wise, just it makes it fair for the players, and it sort of builds up the event a little bit more. It's just hard to get into the events. That's the hardest thing based on the schedule.
Of course, yeah. And, I mean, look, needless to say, bottom line is a change has to be made and has to be made as soon as possible because this is, like you said, it's just insanity, bottom line. So I really hope that does take place because I think ultimately it will also give more value to the Davis Cup. Because
the other thing too is that you know the players feel obligated to play and they can't always play. And then also too, like maybe there should be some sort of rule that you know, there's no rule in the Davis Cup right now where if a country plays and say gets through the first two rounds, three rounds and gets to the final, if let's say Switzerland played their first round, second round, third round, got to the final, Federer and Wawrinka don't have to play all three of those rounds, and then suddenly they can just suddenly say, yeah, we'll play the final, and then they just play the final and win the Davis Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, to me, again, that's another thing. Like, how can you have players not playing in the earlier rounds, and then suddenly they can just walk in and play the final? I don't really agree with that either. They should almost be, you know, eliminated from selection just based on the fact that they haven't played in the earlier rounds. And it kind of makes it unfair if you've got a strong team, and like France has a great team, they got a lot of players to choose from, but you know, Joe Wilfried Tsonga, if he doesn't play all the way through, suddenly he just steps in and plays the final. I don't know if that's really fair for the other side too, so that's maybe another thing that has to be looked at as well.
It's a very interesting viewpoint. I haven't really looked at it like that, but it would make sense. That's how team sports do it, and this is a team. That's a team environment, right? So it would make sense all the way through. Well, with that said, now let's move right into the Monte Carlo draw. It's led by the top two players in the world are back in action with Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic. notable absences are obviously Roger Federer, who said after Miami that you're not going to see him back until Paris. I would be, you know, personally shocked if he does play the French Open at this point with no prep coming in, probably to save himself for, you know, his grass court run. Then you have Milos Raonic. I know you had some insight into that. Maybe you could tell everybody what's going on with him.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Raonic situation really is kind of status quo. As far as I've been told, he's definitely not playing. He's not playing in Monte Carlo. Unfortunate for him because he spends a lot of time in Monte Carlo.
Yeah,
he plays there and he trains there, like a lot of the players do. So I'm sure he would like to play there. And he's just this hamstring problem that he's got is just not getting better fast enough. So he's not ready to go yet. I don't know when he's going to be returning. He's scheduled technically to play in an event in Turkey in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And he's one of the top. He's the only top 35 player in the draw, which is interesting. So there may have been an appearance fee or something thrown in there that we don't know about. But so that's his scheduled next tournament. But you know, again, I'm of the theory that with this injury, and look, Milos Raonic has been hurt so much, and we know that he's been injured. He's had a lot of leg problems, a lot of hamstring problems, ankle problems, that sort of thing. And this year, it's just been, you know, a culmination of the same thing. If I were him, I think the smart thing to do is just to take the entire clay court season off entirely. You know, Roger Federer is pretty much doing it. It's a different scenario, obviously, for him. But I think that, you know, that when you have an injury like this, when you start coming back too early, and he's done that numerous times, he's one of these players where he likes to play. He loves tennis. He lives and breathes tennis, and he wants to play all the time. And, you know, when you have an injury like that, sometimes you just have to, you know, take a step back, listen to what everybody's telling you, and you know, just say, look, I'm not going to play for a little bit. I'm going to rest. And I think that's the thing that he needs to do here is don't come back too soon. There's no need to come back. I mean, look, his ranking is down to number 6 in the world. It's not the end of the world. Even if he drops in, you know, he's still probably going to be in the top 10, even if he doesn't play the whole clay court season. Mm-hmm. I still think that it would just be more beneficial for him to just take all the time he needs, get better, and then return on the grass. And, you know, that's a surface that's good for him. He plays okay on clay, but it's not his best surface. Just rest it up and then come back and get ready for London, Queen's Club, and get ready for Wimbledon. And that way you fully rest the injury and it's fully healed. And, you know, you don't want to have one of these things where he comes back again and then he tweaks it again and he's out for another couple of weeks and then Wimbledon becomes a problem. So I think that's the best theory for him is just to take the clay court season off or maybe just play the French and that's it, like Federer is supposedly going to do, and then rest up for the grass court season.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, that's where he wants to flourish because he made finals of Queens and finals of Wimbledon. So he has massive points to defend at both of those tournaments. And if he fails there, you know, he might even drop, you know, he's probably going to be 15, 16 to 20 in the world if he doesn't do well there. So he's got major points to defend there. I think the French, he made the fourth round. He lost to Ramos Vinolas last year. So decent result, but it's not, you know, anything like he did on the grass.
And this is the tough part with tennis is that, you know, all these guys feel like they got to come back in a hurry because of just what you said. They've got points to defend or they feel like they got to come back because they don't want their rankings to slip. And I think, you know, it's interesting what Federer is doing this year. I mean, this is not something that Federer would have done in the past, but this is something that he's doing now where I think that really, you know, the fact that he's taking time off and he's not considering – you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, Federer, you know, he's going to go for the number one world ranking. He has no interest in the number one world ranking whatsoever. He's said that, and I've seen from Federer a complete change of attitude based on what he was like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, compared to what he's like now. Very Serena Williams-like, where, you know, he's coming towards the, obviously he's going to come, he's probably got 3 years left at most, maybe even sooner, depending on what he decides. He's got a family. You know, he's got other priorities that, you know, tennis isn't everything, and he knows that he's older now and he's got to rest his body. And, you know, I think that it's a cool philosophy for him. And maybe some of the other players look at it and go, you know what, maybe it's tennis isn't everything. Maybe, you know, even Novak Djokovic, right? He's got a child now. He's got another child coming. Yep. Andy Murray's a father now. Jill Wilfred Tsonga. These guys are all parents now. To play every single tournament every week, to defend every tournament because of, you know, it's all because of their rankings. I think maybe some players may take a step back and go, look, like, you know, maybe being top five all year long, every single year, is not the be all and end all. I mean, yeah, you get obviously better matchups in your earlier rounds of tournaments, and there are benefits of getting buys and that sort of thing. But you know, sometimes, you know, with the amount of tennis that these guys are playing and the pressures and the amount of injuries that a lot of these guys are suffering, maybe it's time for them to take a step back and rest up a little bit, and maybe not play as much as some guys are. I mean, and a lot of players who've been playing lots are paying the price. I mean, Dominic Thiem played a ton of tennis last year, and then he got hurt. Mm-hmm. Rafael Nadal used to play a ton of tennis, and look at the injuries that he's had over the past couple of years. So, you know, maybe it's time for some of these guys just to step back a little bit and, you know, concern themselves about getting their body 100% fit, instead of rushing back soon and feeling like they have to defend points at certain tournaments because of rankings.
Yeah, and then you have a guy like Del Potro, again, has had injury concerns with his wrists. He's chilling out for a bit until he comes back in a couple weeks, and he's doing the same thing. Nishikori's not at this event either, so he's had some injury concerns. So everybody's kind of easing in because they know it's a long clay court season, and that's why the draw is the way it is. But I still think, you know, as we'll take a look at it in a second here, still a lot of good matches and some good tennis to be played. One of my favorite tournaments, definitely to watch, and let's see how it breaks down.
So it's going to be phenomenal. I mean, the Monte Carlo event visually is one of the best tournaments in the world. And if you've ever been to the venue itself, it's a phenomenal venue. Mm-hmm. Right on the water there, built up against the mountain. It's a very tight venue. All the courts and the main central are all right stacked in the middle, right by the water, and the mountains over top. And you can you can see the cruise ships in the distance. I mean, look, Monte Carlo is a phenomenal place. I mean, the money that floats around there is unbelievable. You know, the Formula One race there, they
yep.
have huge casinos, the boats that come in are just gigantic. It's all about money and show and class, and it's a very cool place and a very cool event, and one of the top events on tour for sure. And of course, a lot of the players live in Monte Carlo for tax purposes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, Djokovic has got a place there, and Raonic has a place there, Burdick has a place there. So a lot of people hang out there, and you know, when you're getting tax breaks, but you're living in that area, it's a cool environment. Players like it. So
for sure.
Unfortunate that a lot of these guys can't play this year.
Yeah, for sure. So looking at the draw now, we got Murray as a top seed. His quarter for me is very manageable. The only thing that I think is not perhaps known or manageable is his elbow, right? Because he said that he can't serve at full speed at this point. And so that's a little bit of a concern for him. He did play that XO with Federer a couple days back. He was also training at the Mortaglu Tennis Academy in France. He was there for the finals of the Verrazano Open, something that I was covering last week, inaugural event that they've had there. So he's been on court. He's been hitting. I think the ground, he's forehand, back, and everything is good. He just says that it hurts him a little bit on the serve, and he can't serve at maximum speed. His draw looks workable. Robredo had a pretty good event last week in Morocco. Gilles Muller is not really that comfortable on clay. Looking forward from there, he had a nice tussle with Cole Schreiber in Dubai, got through him there. For me, I think, you know, John, when I look at this draw, you got other guys like Cilic here, who has had a little bit of an off year. For me, I think Burdick might have a good, if Murray's not 100% still, I'm taking Burdick to go to the semifinals here, just because he's that type of guy. He's not going to win the tournament, but he can do some damage. You know, he can do some damage just based on, you know, his durability in the earlier rounds. So that's, at this point, that's who I'm taking to come out of this first quarter, even though Murray is obviously on paper the favorite because he's the number one player in the world. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that. I mean, when you look at the rest of the quarter, there's nothing really that stands out there.
Yeah.
Ramos Vinolas is a pretty decent clay court player.
Yeah.
But I don't see him beating Murray. Again, the wild card is of how Murray played. How's the elbow doing?
Yes.
Does he play a couple matches and does he pull out? It's going to make a difference. You know, and if he does, then, you know, that's a benefit. I mean, you got Cole Schreiber in there as well, Benoit Paire, but I just don't see much from the rest of that quarter whatsoever. I think it's a pretty average quarter for Murray, and this was very similar to what Indian Wells was like for him. He didn't have much going on in the top part of the draw, but then when he got to the bottom part of the draw, that was stacked, and it's kind of the same thing at this tournament as well. So I go with that. I go with Burdick and Murray. Burdick is one of those players. He always seems to get to quarterfinals and semifinals, but whenever he has to play anybody of decent caliber, he always ends up losing. So I think he did. I think, if memory serves me right, he may have made it to the Monte Carlo final a couple of years ago. Perhaps I've got it in the back of my mind that he lost to Djokovic in the final, but I may be wrong about that. But he has played some decent tennis on the clay in the past. So one of those players who to me is sort of in the mix, but he never really can deliver when he gets to the big matches. I think if you look at his numbers against the top players, Nadal, Djokovic, Federer, Murray, I think it's absolutely abysmal. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it's something ridiculous, like 18-70 or something like that. So I know it's been miserable against Djokovic. I think it's something like 25-2 or something like that. So whenever he ends up playing the top players, he never seems to come through. But I'll go with what you said in the first quarter.
Okay. Now moving on to quarter number two, it's led by Stan Wawrinka, who in these type of environments, you don't really know what you're going to get from him. But, he did make the finals of Indian Wells, but he should have after Murray bowed out. Other players that he might have to worry about here. I think he gets by Misha Zverev on clay. I don't think he's going to be that comfortable. Yuri Vesely had that nice win over Djokovic here last year, so he definitely can play on the surface.
That's a big upset.
Yeah, for sure. And then you got Pablo Cuevas, who plays nice on the dirt. Let's see what he can do. He's in the 16th seed. Lucas Pui, who's, I think he's a guy we should watch out for here because he's pretty good on clay. And I think this is the type of this point in the year where he's going to try to really make a nice push. Tsonga, again, we don't know really where his mentality and his focus is going to be. Just became a father. Congrats to him. But in terms of his actual form coming in, he was playing great. You know what I mean? He won a couple tournaments in February in Rotterdam and Marseille. Then he didn't play in Miami. He bowed out early in Indian Wells. So hasn't really played a lot. He's going to be fresh. I don't think there's going to be any physical issues. It's just going to be about really the focus and is he back into the swing of things with his match form. So for me, this is a very wild card quarter. I want to go with Stan to come through. He doesn't sell me too much in the Masters events, unfortunately. Historically, he hasn't done that well. So you could see a guy like Lucas Pui or Cuevas even come through. But as it stands now, I'm going to go with Stan to make the semifinals.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going actually Tsonga to go into the semis.
Okay.
The only reason I say that is that Tsonga's played really well this year. He's won a couple tournaments.
Yeah.
I think the break may have done him some good.
For sure.
Maybe there'll be a little bit of a bit of momentum, a little bit of a high, become being a father. I mean, yeah, it's when you come back and you play, and after, having a bit of a layoff, he hasn't been off that long. He really only missed Miami. And he's got a qualifier in the first round, and then, he could have a qualifier. The rest of his draw isn't that strong either. I mean, you got Ryan Harrison in there, who's just a complete up and down. Lorenzi doesn't really do much for me either. Pouet is kind of a, he's sort of a hit and miss guy. I mean, I see a lot of potential in him, but again, one of those players who just when you think he may turn the corner, then he takes a step backwards. So, I like Stan. He won this tournament, was it 3 years ago, I think. But I think that Tsonga against Stan, Tsonga plays Wawrinka well. So, I think if I were to put a semifinal together overall in that top draw, right now I'm gonna move Tsonga into the semifinals and I'm gonna put Murray in there with a asterisk about the elbow beside it for the top half of the semis.
Okay. Yeah. No. I mean, listen, it makes sense. And Tsonga, historically, through the early part of his career, he was not good on clay. But if you look at the last 4 or 5 years, he's done actually pretty good on clay. Made a couple French Open semis. He's done well in these events, especially Monte Carlo. So yeah, he's definitely again. I'm going kind of with the percentages here in terms of form. And because he's been, out of commission for a bit because of the birth of his first child, I don't really know how he's going to be playing. So that's why I'm not sold on it.
It's tough. Whenever you look at tournaments, it's difficult to look at draws and not take the top players. I mean, when you when you see who's there and you go, okay, Murray and Wawrinka, it's easy to just go, you know, those are the top players in the draw. You know, those are the players that you should go with. But sometimes you just have to think that maybe there's a little bit of a, maybe there's a little bit of something there. And to me, that's for me, it's Tsonga and the fact that he's just had a bit of a rest. And maybe this is a tournament that he can do well in. I mean, he's played Wawrinka 8 times, and he's only won 3 of the 8, but still, like, I mean, to win 3, you know, I think he's looking at it, he's lost 4 in a row to Wawrinka, so I mean, he hasn't had much success lately, but he's still beatable. And Wawrinka to me is you know, he's playing okay tennis. I wouldn't say, you know, spectacular tennis, but he's good on the clay. I will say that, but I just like what he brings to the table.
Yeah, for sure. So now moving now to the third quarter, which to me is the most stacked quarter. So it's going to be some great tennis here. You got Dimitrov, who played amazing to start the year, has cooled off since in the last 2 or 3 events. He might take on Casper Ruud, who's got a wild card, great up-and-comer from Norway. For those of you who haven't seen him play, I think this guy's going to be a serious player. So watch out for him. Then you got Roberto Bautista Agut, who plays better on, you know, hard courts, but he's such a complete, you know, mental package that I think he can play well on everything because he's such a professional guy. Then you got Alex Zverev, who again had a good year. He's playing well on everything. Watch out for him. Then we have obviously Rafa Nadal, who's, you know, looking to win this tournament for the 100th time or whatever it is at this point. But yeah. You know what I'm saying. But so it's going to be some great tennis. And you know, how do we look at Rafa now, right? Like Rafa, you know, let's be honest, he's been the second best player in 2017. There's no question about it, right? Lost in the finals of the Australian Open, made finals of Acapulco, made finals of Miami, you know, lost 4th round to Federer, who's been playing out of his mind this year in Indian Wells. So he's had a great year. I mean, people will look at it, oh, he's had an amazing year. I mean, just because he hasn't won anything, he's lost to Federer, who's playing the best, you know, arguably the best tennis of his career, right? So now he comes into a surface. I think we can say with confidence that everything he's done for the first quarter of 2017 has really set him up for now, has put him in this position. And now it's go time for the next 6 weeks to see what he can do here, Barcelona, Madrid, you know, Rome, and then at the French Open. So we'll see how it goes. He opens up either against Kyle Edmund or Daniel Evans. I think he gets through those guys without a worry. You know, Alex Zverev is going to be a tough one for him, but I think he can get through. And then I think he, on a clay court, even though Dimitrov played him really well at the Australian Open, I still think that Nadal has enough, you know, to pepper that backhand, Dimitrov is not hitting his backhand like Federer is right now. So I think he's going to have some trouble there, and that's why I'm taking Nadal to go to the semis. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I look at the lower half of the draw is much stronger than the upper half for sure. I think, you know, like you said, I think Nadal this is his tournament. I mean, even though Djokovic is the 2 seed and Murray is the 1, Djokovic he's really struggled this year, and Murray with the elbow. I think, you know, really, this is Nadal's tournament to win. I mean, he's won this tournament 9 times in 12 years. He won it 8 straight years from 05 to 12, which is just ridiculous.
Yes.
You know, his draw is not going to be easy when you look at, I mean, Evans or Edmund, both from Great Britain, younger players. I don't think they really give him much of a run. I think the Alex Zverev matchup in the third round is interesting. They played each other at the Australian Open, and Nadal beat him in 5, and I think that could pose a little bit of a problem, but the difference is, though, that Nadal is on his surface and clay is his surface. So I think, you know, I feel bad for Zverev. I mean, to me, Zverev is the next young player to come out of, I won't say out of nowhere, but he's going to be the next young player to win a Grand Slam. I really like this guy's game. He's got a big serve. He's a real character on court. He's got a great backhand. He hits the ball hard. Mm-hmm. You've seen him probably a couple times this year play Kyrgios, a couple good matches against Kyrgios, especially the one in Miami. He lost in straights to him in Indian Wells, but I think that this is going to be a guy who really comes on, and he's already made his way up the rankings. He's ranked 14th in the tournament. He's definitely, you know, a player that could get into the top 10 by the end of the year for sure. But I think Nadal probably ends up beating him. I'm going to say it's going to be a close match. just because, again, I like the way Zverev comes out on the court, and he's always got a lot of energy, and he doesn't seem to be fazed by any of the big players, and he's beaten Federer before, too, so he's not afraid to play the big players on the big stage. And then he's got Dimitrov, who's, you know, had a good seven, 8 months, and he's number eight in the tournament. But I still think Nadal, he's owned Dimitrov in his career, so he probably gets through that. So that's sort of the quarter that I see. I see Nadal coming out of that group there, and then in the lower quarter, you got Dominic Thiem, who's, you know, he's sixth in the tournament. He's playing a lot of tennis as he always has, but he hasn't really done tons this year. And then, you know, Djokovic down at the bottom there, his draw looks quite straightforward. I mean, he could get Gilles Simon in the second round. Then he could end up playing another Frenchman and Nicolas Mahut. Or maybe he could get Fanini, who, again, so all these players having kids. I mean, you know, Fanini's having a kid or just had one. Yes. with his wife. So, you know, maybe the Fanini could do something. Or Joe Fanini had a good run in Miami, of course, didn't play well in the semi against Nadal, mind you. But, no. You know, he's a clay court player, too. And you got Goffin in that group as well. So for me, I like if Djokovic. We're going to get a test to see how Djokovic comes out. You know, he's been out for a little bit now, and he played well in Davis Cup, so he looked like he was healthy. But, you know, matches that aren't Davis Cup are a little bit different, so we'll see what he's got. And you know, I like his chances. So I probably have, if I were to pick out of that quarter, I'd go Goffin against Djokovic, with Thiem being upset by Goffin.
Yeah, it's a good call. I mean, as I said, I have Rafa going through to the semis. Djokovic is going to be a little bit of a wild card here too, right? Because he hasn't really played that much this year either. He said that he's healthy. He's not injured anymore. He played really well in Davis Cup. But again, that wasn't, for me, that big of a challenge. You know that that was going to be a cakewalk, you know, for them to get through. And this is a different surface. He's going to have to move a bit. But again, he lives here. He plays here. He's just opened up a restaurant there. You know what I mean? Like, he feels very comfortable in this environment. And you know that he's got a ton of points to defend now. Not at this tournament, because he lost early last year. But for the rest of the clay court season, he pretty much won or made the finals of everything. So he's going to have that in the back of his mind. But, you know, to come in here, I think his draw looks favorable. You know, Khachanov to me is a guy who's, you know, trained in Barcelona, big Russian, huge Western forehand. He just, you know, he hammers the ball, big serve. That could be a good one if it goes into the third round. And then for me, I mean, how is Dominic Thiem playing? Like you said, he hasn't had the greatest year, but let's be honest that this is his best surface. And he made the French Open semifinals last year. And I think overall he's a better player this year than he was last year. I think, you know, we would have hoped that he would have managed his schedule better and played a little bit less. He hasn't done that. I'm sure he's going to play pretty much every single week for the clay court season, which is a mistake in my opinion. But how does he do here? I mean, he's going to be tough. He's, you know, he's a super fit, strong kid. And I think he's going to give Djokovic something to worry about. And for that reason, I mean, when I look at this now, Goffin, again, very smooth, effortless ball striker from the baseline. Not the most powerful guy, but he's like a backboard. He doesn't miss anything. So that's going to be a good one. But I think at this point, I'm going to go with a little bit of the upset theme of this tournament, and I'm going to go with Thiem to make the semifinals against Nadal. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, and I mean, and Thiem won Rio earlier this year, yep, which is a clay court event.
Exactly.
So, I mean, he beat Karina Busta in the final. So, and he beat a couple of other clay court specialists too, including Ramos Vinolas. So, yeah, I mean, there's no reason to think. I just have, again, it's sort of one of those things where you look at the draw and you just go, okay, well, you know, could there be an upset here? And I like the way Goffin has been playing. And yeah, Thiem is a better clay court player, but maybe you know, there'll just be a little bit of a hiccup first clay court tournament of the year. So I could see definitely going Thiem there. That makes sense as well.
Okay, and then from there I have Nadal and Thiem. I'm gonna have Nadal moving through, and then in the top half I had Burdick and Wawrinka. And then I'm gonna go with, that's tough for me too, I think I'm gonna go with Stan to get through, to face Nadal, and I'm going to go with Nadal to win the tournament. What do you have?
Well, I'm very similar. I had Murray and Tsonga in the semis in the one side, and I had Nadal and Djokovic on the other side. I mean, there's nothing too crazy there when you look at everything. But I will actually take Tsonga to beat Murray in the semifinals.
Okay.
I don't know why I've got the Tsonga bug here, but I like Tsonga. And maybe Murray, first tournament back in a while, a bit of a hiccup, and who knows if he even gets that far with the elbow. So
exactly.
I'm going to go Tsonga in the top half of the draw to make the final, the semis against Murray, for him to beat Murray. And then the lower part of the draw, I'm going to take Nadal and Djokovic. They've had some epic battles over the years, but I'm going to take Nadal to beat Djokovic strictly on the fact that this is Nadal's surface and Djokovic hasn't been playing. So I got a Tsonga and Nadal final. And then I'll take Nadal to win the whole tournament. Like you, I think it's his tournament to lose, even with Murray and Djokovic in it. I think this is an event that he plays well in. He played a great final last year when he beat Monfils. It was one of the best matches of the year.
Yeah, it was
back
awesome.
Back and
yeah.
forth, long, epic clay court match. And I really think that this will be ATP title number 29, I believe, for Nadal, just back of Djokovic for the lead amongst all the players, and he's just owned this tournament in the past, and I think there's no reason to think that he can't win it again this year.
Yeah, no question about it. This is his time.
Federer's not there, so he can't lose to him for a fourth time.
Yeah, fourth time this year, fifth time in a row it would be. Okay, so not changing gears. So that's what we have this week for the Monte Carlo event. You know, ending off the show now, John, want to talk a little bit about Jeannie Bouchard, because some interesting stuff happening with her. She dropped down to play an ITF event this week. She lost actually today to Vicky Duvall easily, 6-love, 6-3, which is to 100.
Terrible
result. Duvall is ranked, I believe, 114. In the previous round, she was playing and another American girl who was, I think, 606, and she almost lost that one. She got through her first round there. So, you know, John, you know, obviously both of us being Canadian, we follow a lot of the Canadian players as well as the other ones. Do you find at this point, because, you know, with Parsa, who's the regular co-host here, we talked about this and we talked about it in our last show. What are your thoughts overall on Bouchard? I mean, she had an amazing 2014 season. Since then, she has been a shadow of that player. Obviously, everything else has become bigger, right? Her bank account has grown, popularity has grown, social media blowing up, Sports Illustrated, all of this. Now, question is there a direct correlation between all of that fame and all of this money resulting ultimately in a decrease in her level of play? Because we've seen, obviously, other players, both men and female, on both tours, you know, get the same, but then still elevate their games and reach and strive for more and get to that point. But with Bouchard, we've completely seen her, you know, regress and almost, I mean, she could be out of the top 100 by the end of the year, right? So, you know, just overall, what are your thoughts on the dynamic there, and can she turn it around, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, it really is a baffling situation. I've been on multiple shows in the past, couple of years, and I've been asked the same question. You know, what's the deal with Bouchard? And you know, the answer is I'm not sure. It's just mind-boggling that somebody who can have such a run that she did, when she made to the Wimbledon final, she was reaching semifinals of Grand Slams. She won her first and only WTA tournament. She was the darling of women's tennis and almost the darling of tennis in general, with all due respect to the men. I mean, this was right during the height of the big four, and then here comes Jeannie Bouchard, and was almost getting more recognition than Serena Williams was at the time, and it was great for Canada. It was great to see, because Canada actually had a female tennis player that they could root for. It had been such a long time that a female tennis player had any significance in singles on tour at all. And and then for it to go so south so fast has really been disappointing. And I think that the hardest part for me. In the decline of the way that she's played and the results that she's been having, is just, it's just, it's not just the fact that she's just losing, it's just how she's losing. She's losing a lot of matches to a lot of players that she should be beating, and really, there's no excuse for it. And I'm not talking about, you know, yeah, if she's been hurt, that's one thing, but she's been losing to players who are coming off of injuries where they haven't even been playing the game of tennis for an entire year. Mm-hmm. You know, Nick Kyrgios's girlfriend, for example, the fact that she played her at a tournament earlier this year and then lost handily after she'd been out of the game with a shoulder injury for almost a year, to lose handily. You know, Vicky Duval is ranked 896 in the world right now. She's overcoming a battle with cancer, and good on her for able to get back on the court and see her playing well. But you know, to lose to a player who's been out of the game for that long, 6-love, 6-3 in a quarterfinal of an ITF event. You know, she only won 30% of her first serve points today. You know, that to me is just telling as to where her game has gone to now. And she's had some really bad losses. She's had some really strange losses. You know, it's not as if she's going out and losing to Angie Kerber or Radwanska or any of the top players on the women's side on a regular basis. She's losing to players who are either ranked the same as her or way lower down in the rankings than she is. And that's the baffling part. Now, I don't know, you know, week to week, I don't watch every single match that she plays, but when I do watch her play, I notice that her serve has really been letting her down. Like I said, she only won 30% of her serves today. Mm-hmm. There was another match recently where she got broken 8 times in a match. When she lost, I believe, at Indian Wells, she had 68 unforced errors in her match. You know, I don't know if it's the change of, you know, flipping different coaches or just the training regime or what it is. I mean, it sounded like this year that she was really going to come into the year with a different mindset. She went to Las Vegas and she was talking with Steffi Graf and Andre Agassi. She was doing this big workout program. And it sounded like, hey, you know, maybe she's going to do something. And when she went, she got the third round of the Australian Open this year, I believe. Yeah. You know, so it started off well for her. And then, sure enough, she ends up losing, you know, 4 straight first-round matches in the big tournaments on the WTA draw. And to players, like I said, who she should be beating. She's not losing to the top players. These are players who are, you know, ranked 50 or 100 or 150, and in this case today, 896. So it really is a baffling slide that I can't put my finger on. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I think is the off-court stuff. Is that a distraction? The swimsuit edition, the Twitter dates, and all these things that she's doing. And sometimes I wonder. But you know, I will say the one positive that I will say for her is that she has. Whenever she does lose a match, she doesn't make excuses for she doesn't say anything badly about her opponent. She takes it, you know, very stand up. She always says that she, you know, here's why I lost, and she doesn't seem to be overly concerned about it. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but she seems to be taking it quite well, and she always seems to be saying that she looks at things positively. And you know, this the fact that she's playing these ITF matches shows that she must realize that her game is very poor right now, and she's doing anything that she can just to try and give her some confidence. And mm-hmm. and I think that's the only thing that she really can do is you got to try and do something different and try and make something happen, and at least she's trying to do that. So whether that actually turns around or not for her, that's to be determined. But you know, we'll wait and see what happens. I guess she's like Milos Raonic. She's going to be playing an event in Turkey in a couple of weeks in Istanbul. So it's another clay court event for her. So you know, just keep playing tournaments, keep plugging away, and try to find some things and try and gain some positives and some momentum somehow, some way.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, ultimately, there's another dynamic to that as well, right? The dynamic of Serena Williams, as great as she is and as great as she's still playing, you know, winning Grand Slams and counting. I don't think she's done. You know, she's 35, 36 going to be this year, right? You know, yeah. We have to look to the future, right? Who's going to carry that mantle for the WTA in terms of a global player that can transcend the sport, like a Federer, like a Nadal, like a Serena? The WTA, for me, really doesn't have anybody like that. Bouchard could be that type of player, But she's got a long way to go at this stage. But it would be amazing for her to get back to that stage, because it would put tennis, even more so on the map and on the front of so many different publications. And it's just good overall for the sport. So we do wish her well, and we hope that she can get on track, because it's it's definitely something that we need at this point.
And
with
you're right, the WTA needs her to be playing well. I mean, they try to do everything possible to get her attention. And you'll see that she often plays, even though her ranking is low down. She'll play on one or two of the top courts at the big tournaments. I think she's played at Indian Wells 4 straight matches on the main center court, and she hasn't. She hasn't really deserved to be there, but because of the fact that she's Jeannie Bouchard and she does garner a lot of attention, she's been getting those the big court matches. And I think the WTA needs her to do well, would like her to do well. Now it's just up to her to try and put it together and make it happen.
No question. Okay, John. So that will be it for this week. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, no problem. Enjoyed it. I'd love to come on again, and always fun to talk tennis anytime you get a chance to. So we're counting on Nadal to win the Monte Carlo Masters, and we'll look like geniuses.
For sure. So for everybody out there, make sure to follow John at SportsHorn on Twitter for great tennis content, as well as stats and everything you'll need to know. He travels around on the tour. You were in Indian Wells this week. I know you were in London last year. You have anything else coming up this week in terms of travel?
No, sticking around. I'm going to be covering the I'm on the hockey beat this week, working for Comcast in Washington, doing the Leafs Capitals series for the NHL playoffs, and then I join up with ESPN to do a bunch of the Raptors playoff games too, wherever they go. So that's the next little bit. So off the tennis, I'll be obviously following it, and I'd still write articles and do things. But on the clay court, once it heads over to Europe, I'm not a clay court specialist myself, so I wait till the grass season and I get back into it. And then I'll be over in London just before Wimbledon for a couple of women's events that I'll be doing some commentary for too. So that's when I get back into the thick of it.
Perfect. Okay, guys, so thank you everybody out there for listening. Make sure to check us out next week as we wrap up the Monte Carlo Rolex Masters and look forward to the rest of the clay court season. In the meantime, for anybody looking to get down to any of the upcoming clay court events, make sure to hit up Top Notch Tennis Tours for all your ticket and cover. Thanks again, and thank you to John. Have a good day.